All right, folks, John Henning here with the Franchise Radio Show. And today we're joined by Mike Siniscalchi, the CEO and founder of 810 Billiards and Bowling. Mike, thank you so much for jumping in, buddy. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, John.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Now, before we get into the business stuff, tell us just a little bit about you. Who are you? Where are you from? Where do you live? That kind of thing. Just give us just a 30-second, here is Mike.
Sure. From New York originally. That's where I grew up. And I went to school at Lehigh University in Pennsylvania, spent my first decade of my career in finance, most of that as an equity options market maker based out of Chicago and then New York. And then in 2015, moved down to South Carolina and started the business there and opened our first location May of 2015. Spent 7 years living in South Carolina, and just a couple of years ago, moved my family out to Phoenix, Arizona, which is where we call home now.
All right, good deal. Just a side note, I happen to live about 30 minutes from Lehigh University. So I'm just down Route 100 there towards King of Prussia area, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so I'm pretty familiar with the area. It's where I lived. I grew up in central Pennsylvania and moved down here 25 years ago with my wife. She's from this area. And, you know, with what I do, I can literally do it from anywhere in the country, right? So
yeah, a lot more of that these days.
Yes. Hey, I was remote before being remote was cool. Okay.
There you go.
All right. Good deal. Well, let's jump into the business stuff here a little bit. Why don't you tell us a little bit about 810 Billiards and Bowling, kind of the founding of the company. Bring us up to speed on where you guys are at and what the journeys look like to get you there.
Sure. So we're, you know, upscale eatertainment, as we've been coined. So you know, casual dining, lots of different entertainment options inside our buildings. And, you know, started the first location in North Myrtle Beach, South Carolina in 15 with, you know, as a proof of concept there, and then scaled a couple more corporate units in the South Carolina area before getting into the franchise space, which actually started pursuing that in around 2018, 2019. And then kind of as soon as we got everything up and running for that, COVID put a bit of a damper on indoor entertainment, as you can imagine. So we kind of paused that, figured out how we were going to manage that adventure. Came through it quite well, really proud of our team and the way they handled that over those couple of years, and actually got some opportunities out of it. We took over a Lucky Strike, both two of them, one in Phoenix, one in Houston, and that were shuttered during the pandemic, and Lucky Strike was not coming back to them. So we took those over, converted them over to 810s, and got those open the end of 21. And they're both doing well now. And then as the COVID freeze thawed, the interest in our space and franchising, you know, took off. I think that was a bit of a silver lining for us in COVID. Was it was obviously difficult for theaters and indoor entertainment, but not having those social gathering venues, I think really made people appreciate how thirsty they were for it, and how much that really adds to a social experience. And so coming out of that, had really good interest in you know, what we do, and a lot of good partners have come on board in the last 18 months or so. You know, so where we stand today, the five corporate stores, Greenville, South Carolina. At this point we are 16 franchisees under agreement, and we have, seven of them under LOI or lease, and the other nine are still, you know, working through site selection or newer signings. So, you know, a lot of Florida development is a big part of the pipeline, but certainly expanding across the country. You know, we think that's one of the upsides of our concept, is it's a universal appeal. You know, no matter where you go in the country, there's going to be a pretty consistent demand for family and young adult entertainment with high quality food and beverage programs. So, you know, we're coming into California in a couple markets, all the way over to Florida, and a number of markets in between. So that's where we stand today.
That's good. You used a phrase there that I've never heard before, the eatertainment, right?
Yep, you know, the we're more than entertainment. You know, we're proud of our kitchen and bar programs, and you know, we want our guests to enjoy a meal while they're with us, not just come in for bowling after dinner somewhere else. So, you know, that is kind of the niche that we fall into, is you know, a food forward entertainment space.
I like it. I like it a lot. So, look, the big question everybody's just been waiting on the edge of their seat to hear is why 810?
Yes. So, you know, from the first location, had, you know, always intended to scale the concept once we got through that first location and figured out all the things we had to learn. And to that end, I, you know, wanted something that was going to be a little more scalable from a brand standpoint. Is, you know, the more traditional bowling centers, it's always, you know, or even where I started, you know, it was North Myrtle Beach Bowling Center. Sure. Little River Lanes, Myrtle Beach Bowl, and wanted to, you know, develop a brand that was going to be a bit more agnostic to market and be able to port to other areas. And, you know, I liked a number for that reason, you know, not really tied to any geography. And the actual 810 choice, some people think it's a split, but it was actually if you look graphically at our logo, I think it's a bit of a nod to it. The 8 is 8-ball billiards and the 10 is 10-pin bowling.
All right. So my wife initially had guessed it was a split. And I said, no, that would be the 7-10 split, right? That's the one that everybody knows about. But I said, no, it must be something else. And then when I looked at the name billiards and bowling, I am a big billiards and pool player. So that was my guess, was the 8 ball and the 10 pins. So good deal. All right. I like it. I like it a lot. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the franchise side. So take us through, like, what is the business? We know that there's, you know, bowling, we know that there's billiards, we know that there's food, but give us an idea of scale, size, number of employees. Like, walk us through the model itself a little bit on the business model.
Sure. So, you know, there's definitely a variety in terms of the size of our footprint, but our kind of core focus when we go out for site selection in a new market is 30,000 feet. And on that footprint, you're going to have about 20 bowling lanes, 8 championship billiard tables, 100-seat dining and bar area, typically incorporating our milkshake bar as well. Mean Mugs milkshake bar is a concept, a store-in-store concept that we've launched in the last year, and most of our franchisees are opting in to include one of those as well. Creates a nice synergy with the other things going on in the building. You know, additions for corporate events, birthday kid parties, and add on a souvenir milkshake for everybody. And so that's a newer piece, and continuing to diversify the entertainment options beyond billiards and bowling. In that 30,000 foot, you'll have about 5,000 feet of arcade. Also, we'll have 3 or 4 high-end dart lanes that okay. we do on an hourly basis. You know, then we've added a couple golf simulators to that standard program, sports simulators. So, you know, more group destination and, you know, entertainment pieces for the event side of the business. And in the same vein, added a axe throwing product with 4 lanes of axe throwing. So, you know, we cram a lot of program into 30,000 feet.
A lot of fun. Sounds like a lot of fun in 30,000 square feet.
That's it. And, you know, and the event side of the business has been more and more a larger piece of the puzzle for us as we've built a sales team over the last couple of years from the ground up. And and that's a big value proposition for our franchisees as well. You know, having started with one center, I realized you're kind of stuck in the middle between you need a sales presence, but you don't really have the bandwidth to justify a full-time salesperson.
Sure.
And even if you have one person, they've still got days off and you've got downtime in terms of taking leads and converting them into event business. So we've built a national sales team that supports all of our franchisee locations in addition to the corporates, takes all, you know, any party inquiries in real time and can facilitate that sale as soon as the customer is reaching out without any need for tags. So, you know, as we built that event revenue pipeline, realizing, you know, we get a good frequency of corporate clients want to come in every quarter for team building and these other things that have become a lot bigger outside the office as the traditional office presence has shrunk. Sure. Companies are looking for good venues to, you know, create that team atmosphere that that used to kind of happen around the water cooler. And now everybody needs to get off of Zoom and go get in person somewhere. So by adding some of these other things like golf simulators, axe throwing, then groups can come out with a higher frequency. And, you know, you came bowling last month. Why don't you come spend an afternoon in the simulator and have some food and beverage and do that for this month's team building outing. So,
Mike, it sounds like a subscription model in the works there, right, for the corporate. So I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's no one in our space is really doing it quite like that yet. But it has been something that, you know, works in a lot of similar, tangential industries. You know, tramp parks and other entertainment styles are big on it. So it's, you know, it's in the roadmap. But what that looks like is still very much a question mark. So.
Hey, let's talk a little bit about your franchise owners. Who is an ideal owner? Like, there's a lot of different types of entrepreneurs out there, a lot of different experience levels, investment levels, folks looking for different things. Who really makes an ideal owner for A10 Billiards and Bowling?
Yeah, ultimately, we're looking for, you know, a financial savviness in terms of understanding financial statements, profit center management, and you know, that's the main function for most of our franchisees are not typically hands-on. You know, after we get through opening, most of them are more in executive model franchising where, you know, we require a GM that, you know, brings the food and beverage experience. A lot of franchisees ask us, you know, do I need to know how to execute food and beverage? Do I need to have a hospitality background? And you know, absolutely not. I mean, that's what, you know, our training and hiring assistance is for. But from the franchisees themselves, it's typically, you know, looking for a passive source of income. And the most important thing from our side is ability to manage at a high level, a relatively complex operation, right? We've got a lot of different things going on under our roof and all those things need to work together harmoniously and, managing that leadership team inside the building. Mm-hmm. And managing, you know, that financial statements, P&L, balance sheet, and being comfortable, understanding what those statements tell you about the business and where there's opportunities and, what we can do to ensure success. So.
What does the employee landscape look like for you guys? How many, you mentioned like corporate handles, you know, some of the national sales center stuff, but from a day-to-day operations, how many employees and what types am I hiring if I'm an owner?
Yeah, absolutely. And so on the sales side, that does, you know, take the sales outside of the individual stores. So that way our operations team in each location gets to just focus on executing for the guest. Doesn't have to worry about the sales process and just concentrates on, you know, inside the four walls and making sure that we're delivering a great experience, because ultimately that's obviously what's going to bring people back and make a successful location. So in terms of the roles there, typically it'll be five managers, a GM that, again, we is not the franchisee. We require you to bring somebody in, usually looking for 20 plus years, high volume food and beverage experience on that side. The entertainment piece, we can teach and train. There's we got that pretty well locked down. And although we do the same thing on the food side, there's no replacement for 10 plus years of experience on a high volume, in a high volume sure. kitchen bar. We can train the recipes, but being, you know, slammed on a Friday night and keeping those ticket times down, that's that comes from experience. So that's typically the GM profile will be, doesn't need to be come from entertainment, but they do need to come from high volume food and beverage. And then that GM will go out and hire their team of four managers. So it'll be a kitchen manager, three front of house managers. Mm-hmm. Each of the three front of house, one will take bar, one takes our host team, one takes our server team. And then obviously your kitchen manager is responsible for everybody back of the house. So that's kind of your core five-person management leadership team. And then they're each going to hire their specific departments, handle scheduling, training, inventory in those respective departments. So you're going to have, you know, typically 6 to 8 in the kitchen, line cooks and dishwashers, 10 to 12 under the server team, front of house, you know, handling guest facing, 5 to 6 bartenders, and typically 6 to 8 hosts, which tend to be, you know, typically more junior employees, often high schoolers or recent high school graduates, you know, at the host desk to kind of greet our guests coming in and help get their experience started, at which point the servers will take over from them. But so overall, you're typically 30, 35 to people in terms of total headcount. Large majority of the front of house there, bartenders, hosts, servers, those are going to be part-time roles.
Yeah, it makes sense. Makes sense. You got to cover all the different shifts and everything for the business. What does a day in the life of the business owner look like? If you have that GM and you've got the different verticals of your other managers and they have their teams, what is it? I already probably know the answer to this one, but what is it that the owner is really focused on as far as working on the business?
Yeah, well, that's exactly it, right? We want the owner focused on working on the business, not working in the business. And
right.
So if they feel like they got to be inside the building for the product to be what it needs to be, then we've got an issue. Either we've got the wrong people in the wrong seat, or we failed to train properly, or something else is amiss. So, you know, we want our franchisees in the building as much as they want to be there, but to be confident that when they step away, they're in good hands, and that management team, you know, is properly aligned and properly trained. So that allows them to focus on the business, which, you know, being out there as a brand ambassador in the local market, I mean, that's the kind of the heart of the franchise model, right?
Is sure.
We've got the business model, we've got the tools, the SOPs, the upstream support, the, you know, equipment and install experience. The franchisees have their local market knowledge. They know, you know, the right sites in their backyard where people are going for entertainment to develop a site. And then once we have doors open, they're out there, you know, working with the Chamber of Commerce, working with city leadership, you know, potentially generating event leads and things and community outreach. And then, you know, obviously staying highly in touch with their GM and their management team to make sure that, you know, anything that does pop up that needs to be addressed by them can be quickly. They're also driving their local marketing. So, you know, our marketing director provides content, guidance, you know, grand opening budget and spends. In terms of actually deploying your local advertising spend, that is typically handled by the franchisee, contracting billboards, radio, what have you. I mean, once in those first couple months, it's definitely hands-on. We expect our franchisees to be in the store and setting those baselines of a new business, right, and understanding what food costs, bar costs, expectations should be, establishing that. And then once we get through that kind of 3 to 4 month opening window, then it should become more of a community liaison brand ambassador role where they are out and about, you know, getting people interested in ATEP.
What type of investment level are we looking at? I always tell everybody to reference the franchise disclosure documents to get the exact numbers, but just kind of give us a general idea of a range of investment here and how much capital does someone need to bring to the table?
Yeah, so, you know, great question. Obviously, we're in a capital intense concept. You know, there's a significant build out to everything we do. And, you know, the upside of entertainment is, once the doors are open, you got a high margin cash flow on your entertainment drivers. The downside is you got to buy all that entertainment on the front end. So right. The overall investment typically is about $100 a foot in terms of construction and build out cost, including your leasehold improvements and your, you know, trade fixtures and equipment. And we're usually seeking out tenant improvement allowance from the landlord to offset between 30 and 50% of that. So typically, you know, $25 to $50 in tenant improvement allowance will cover a good chunk of that. And then our franchisees are typically using a SBA 7A loan program to cover another 35 to 40%, and then are putting in, you know, 10 to 15% cash equity injection. So, you know, in a 30,000 foot scenario, you know, we would tell our franchisees, you want to have 500 to 600 in liquid capital available for the project. Your actual hard injection is typically going to be more like 400, 450, and then the remainder be your working capital and, you know, starting inventory.
Good deal. Good deal. Now let's talk a little bit about the training side. You know, I'm assuming you mentioned a couple of things. We can train the entertainment. We're looking for this kind of person for the GM, that kind of thing. But walk us through, what does the training look like for an owner? And then is this a train the trainer type model with the staffing side, with the employees?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, we don't require our owners to go through the training. They're always invited, but it is not a requirement. But the GM and their management team goes through an extensive 4-week training program where they either, depending on where the location is, they may come out to South Carolina, where we can train across multiple locations there. Or if they're a West Coast team, they'll be going to a Phoenix location to do the training. But you know, basically you're going through a pretty intense module over 4 weeks, where it doesn't matter if you're the bar manager, you're the server manager, you're the kitchen manager, you're cross-trained in everything inside the building. Ultimately, even though those departments are going to be your focus and what you're accountable for, everybody, you know, ultimately is there to ensure a great guest experience. And you know, sometimes the kitchen managers got to go make a drink, or the server manager's got to hop on an expo, and these things happen in the hospitality industry, and everybody needs to be comfortable doing that and kind of get their feet wet in every aspect of the business. So that's typically the on-site program executed by corporate, where we're training that 5-person management team over an extended period.
Sure.
Then we're going back to local market, where our opening team is working with our franchisees management team now to hire their frontline teams. And then we'll do, you know, on-site training for your servers, bartenders, line cooks. So yeah, we're training that management team to then train their team, but we are also sending our opening team as support and reinforcement during that on-site training phase, so that, you know, they're not expected to have retained 100% of everything in their 4-week crash course. So we continue that support through grand opening, and then typically within a week or two after grand opening, and getting to actually drive the car themselves for a week or two, the local management team at that point is usually ready to take the reins 100% and drive from there.
It sounds a little like drinking from that proverbial fire hose, but then you're there with the training wheels to help them along, right?
Exactly.
We've very comprehensive.
Put them through the high volume in that 4-week program, and they'll definitely be tested through that. But then once we come back to do it for real for their store, you know, we're there to exactly like I said, have the training wheels, have the support, and you know, when you forget something in the heat of the moment, that we're there to retrain and address any gaps.
That's actually my very next question, Mike, is about the support. You know, I'm assuming at this kind of scale and volume that you guys are providing a lot of support to the franchise owners and the team members and stuff. What does that support look like? You have somebody that's like their designated person in operations, or how do you guys provide that type of support?
Yeah, absolutely. And as the, you know, a concept of this size, it does have a couple different elements to it. In terms of the day-to-day operations, that really falls to our director of ops, who is their go-to point person for, you know, any mid-chef questions, anything that comes up in terms of scheduling, you know, cost of goods, labor cost management. That's really all going to fall in our director of ops. And typically what we'll do now is they'll have a bi-weekly management call, typically an hour with the franchise team's management, to identify any issues, answer any questions, take feedback on, you know, maybe new menu items they think would sell in that particular market that maybe isn't incorporated in the corporate menu program. So, you know, it's definitely a two-way street, but that kind of touch point is every other week to keep a nice cadence on the communication. And then, you know, obviously on the sales side, they our sales team has a weekly call with the franchisee management team to give them their lay of the land in terms of events coming down the pike. Here's what you have lined up for the next 10 days. You know, any specialty menu items that might have been offered for an event, or we, you know, that way the kitchen manager knows if they need to get special product in or have anything else. GM is on those as well, so they can staff appropriately for the events. And then on the marketing side, like I said, it's really driven on a day-to-day basis by the franchisee, but supported by our director of marketing, content creation, you know, social media content, radio advertising campaigns, et cetera. And yeah, so it's ultimately the director of ops is kind of our main touch point for the day-to-day. And then at the owner level, I typically will have a monthly in the beginning and then move to a quarterly review with them directly to kind of go over at a higher level. Let's, you know, how was P&L for the month, and let's kind of go through that, and, you know, and then also take feedback from our franchisees on what they see as an owner, right, is different than what their team might be seeing and telling our ops team in terms of opportunities for new products, new improvements that we can be thinking about. So having that added brain trust from franchisees in those owner seats is really valuable. So we're excited to be continuing to have more of that.
I've always excited to hear franchisors talk about that aspect of it, because obviously we don't know everything about everything, right? So you get that feedback from the franchisees about what they're experiencing and make those, you know, adjustments. That's really, really positive. What the reason I bring that up is because you probably know this, not every franchisor does that. Right. So I'm just saying sometimes it's a tell them how to do it. Other times it's work with them to figure out how to do it better. Right. You know, so I'm really, really excited to hear you say that.
Yeah, we definitely fall in the latter category there. You know, we're a young brand. We've got our model pretty honed in at this point. But as we go into new markets and as we, you know, continue to evolve and offer, you know, new entertainment drivers and different pieces inside the program, there's always going to be room for good new ideas.
You know, I want to talk just a little bit here as we get towards the end here, Mike. Give us an idea what, I mean, there's a lot of things out there that we can do now, right, as consumers. So I'm a consumer. I can look in Google and say, okay, here are the 20 things I can go do. What's the difference in your type of business versus other competing businesses out there in the same market?
Yeah, ultimately for us, you know, we're not the only bowling alley in town, any town we go into, but you know, it's kind of a two-tranched industry picture where you've got your traditional bowling centers that are never going to catch up on the food and beverage program. They kind of take their league business and do their thing, and we're happy to let them have that. We don't do leagues. We're we're an entertainment concept for a casual entertainment customer, and really that brings it all back to hospitality, and that entertainment customer has choices, right? Because they're not a league bowler who's going to go there every Tuesday for 38 weeks and, you know, and have that commitment. They're going to have a lot of choices for where to spend their food and beverage dollar, their entertainment dollar, and it all comes back to a service experience that is, you know, unparalleled. And we've done, knowing that from the beginning, that's really how we built our systems, and our program was all around that full service customer experience once they walk into the building. So, you know, for one example, you look at our more direct competitors that do offer a lot of different entertainment things inside the venue, not just the traditional bowling centers, but we're able to streamline that experience for the guests. So you come in, you check in, and then You never have to go back and wait another line. You are at, from that point forward, your server becomes your point of contact with the business and your experience. Them and their tab and your check throughout the experience follows you as you go do different things. You know, whether you want to go to the arcade, you want to go throw darts, you know, then you want to hop on a bowling lane, your server's sticking with you and you're having a seamless experience as opposed to, okay, well, now I got to go cash out for the bowling and I got to go open a tab at the bar. And now I got to go back up to the host desk to get the darts for, you know, the dart lane. And so this way, you know, everything is seamless and you know, hopefully kind of look up after a couple hours and realize, wow, where did the time go? We were having a blast.
Having fun, right? Yeah.
And so it's basically trying to remove the hurdles to having as much fun as possible.
Well, you said something there that I think is a huge differentiator, and I want to make sure our listeners hear what you said there. The phrase you used was, we're okay with them having that league business because that's not who we are, right? And knowing who you are in any business is important, of course, and who are your customers? And your customers aren't necessarily those league bowlers. They're the folks that want, and you've used this word, and this is the one I want to emphasize, like with an exclamation point, is the experience. Because I think that's probably the biggest differentiator. The freezer pizza at my local Bob's Bowling Alley is not what we're looking for here at 810, right? So, and you know what I mean? The soft pretzels that really aren't soft, right? Yeah. So,
oh, yeah. The nacho cheese that's been sitting for a week.
Yeah. So that experience has got to be the huge differentiator here, right? I mean, I love what you guys have done with adding in the different, you mentioned a couple of things with the dart lanes, the axe throwing you've got, and it seems like even from when you started, you're still looking at other opportunities to bring, you know, different revenue streams in as well with the milkshakes. You mentioned the milkshake bar. So that's pretty exciting stuff for somebody that's looking to grow with a company that's looking to grow.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, we're a young brand. We got a lot of territories still available, and we're continuing to evolve. You know, the core program has proved itself and works. You know, what I would call the core program is our billiards, bowling, food, and beverage. But as we continue to evolve and learn, we're, you know, adding different pieces that work together. And so whether it's, you know, mini golf, axe throwing, golf simulators, right? It's like what is a synergy both for what the guests are looking for and for our labor cost management. And if you're, you already got your host on there to hand out bowling shoes, get folks to their lanes, no reason why they can't hand out a putter or take them over to get them set up on axes or a dart lane. So just trying to find things that make sense both from the customer and revenue generation standpoint, also from keeping an eye towards cost management and being able to take more of that entertainment revenue to the bottom line.
Well, Mike, I want to give you the last word here as we wrap up. Let folks know, you know, why 810, right? And then how should they reach out to you if they want to reach out to you guys? Is it best to do it phone, email, web? How do you want to connect with people? And I'll make sure to include all the contact information on the page where we host the podcast as well for you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. So the YS is an interesting question because I think we're a bit unique in the franchising space in that we're the only entertainment center concept that I'm aware of that is franchising. So I think the bigger question is, as for our potential franchisees usually, is do I want to get into the entertainment business?
Right.
You know, if they do, we're kind of the best option out there. There we do have plenty of competition, but it's typically privately held or you know, large public entities, not something where an individual investor has access to participate in the system. And then in terms of, you know, okay, I'm looking at lots of different franchise options, why do I want to go with an entertainment center? You know, there's pros and cons to everything, right? Like we talked about, there is a significant initial investment. But the other side of that is that investment you make, that large footprint, that entertainment presence is a pretty strong barrier to entry for competition coming into the market around you.
Sure.
Right. I might pop up a Subway shop next to a Jimmy John's, but I'm not going to do a 30,000 foot build out down the street from somebody doing the same thing I'm looking to do. So once you kind of plant your flag in the ground, you've got pretty strong barriers to entry. And obviously once you get up and running, it's a very strong margin business. So, you know, that's really what is the main driver, I think, for the interest that we get from potential franchisees.
What's the best way for folks to reach out to you, Mike? How do you want them to reach out and raise their hand?
Yeah, the best way is probably going to be on our website, a10bowling.com. And there's a franchising dropdown where you can submit a quick inquiry form, and then we'll get back to you with our playbook and some interviews like this and some more material for folks to dive into and help evaluate if it's a good option for them, and then how to take next steps if they're interested.
All right, good deal. I'll make sure I'll include that information here right below the interview for you as well. All right,
sounds good. I appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Well, there you go, folks. John Henning here with the Franchise Radio Show. We just got done talking with Mike Siniscalchi, the CEO and founder of 810 Billiards and Bowling. Mike, thank you so much, buddy.
My pleasure. Thanks again for having me, John. It was great to be here.